We're getting some images right now of Uruguayan players going into the stands and interacting, if you will, with Colombian supporters. You obviously see things being thrown, including fists and punches and beverages and garbage. And unfortunate scenes in Charlotte, that after the final whistle as Colombia goes through. And then you see the relationship with some of these players. Nunez being consoled, it tells you how passionate this sport is and what it means to these two countries.
Well, we had the show all planned out, and then some breaking news last night. We had Ron Artest 2.0 as the loose cannon, I'll call him. Not Brian Pillman, but the loose cannon Darwin Nunez after the defeat of Uruguay in Copa America by Colombia 1-0. Colombia somehow survives a 10-man match and goes on to prevail and advance to the final, now unbeaten, I think, in 29 matches.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Colombia is going to face Argentina. These are the two best teams in this competition, so we're getting the final that we deserve. We're going to talk about the Euro final. Somehow the team that I picked, Nick, England, is in the final. So I am almost batting 1,000. If they win, I will have called it, and it will be the most unconventional title because they just don't look like a European champion. But hey, I don't think they're going to argue it if they take that, if it comes home.
No,
I don't think they're going to argue it. But anyways, we'll get to all that. But we have also big news out of the United States men's national team. Huge, huge news. It's Greg Berhalter is fired, justifiably fired. He gets the sack. Nick and I have been calling for it for months. And now it finally happens. It comes to fruition. So we are very, very pleased about that. But, you know, Nick, as they always say, the proof is in the follow-up. What does the United States men's national team do now in terms of managers? Who do they hire? Because if you don't get that right, then you're right back where you started. And it's hard to imagine. There's not a lot of international managers that really want to take this job. And it's sad because this is – Now, Craig Burley will argue with you that it's not the most talented American side in history, but I mean, I could say that it could be considered. I mean, I think that Christian Pulisic's probably the most talented American player, just individually, that the team's ever had. Mm-hmm. I mean, I rate him above Clint Dempsey and Jose Altidore and those guys.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about all that, but let's first start out. Like, what have you? How's your week been going? What have you been doing? What you've been watching? I know you're looking at these early Champions League and Europa League Conference League qualifications. So,
yeah,
what's going on with that?
The football world has kicked off club wise. I mean, I know we're at the end of we got both finals coming up Sunday, but we have Conference League, Europa, and even Champions League qualifying rounds have started. Now, the format has changed, so people pay attention. There's only two rounds of qualifying instead of the big NCAA bracket style that they used to do where, four or six teams would make the group stage. Now it's completely different. So you have two rounds of qualifying, and that has started this week. We have Conference League, Europa, and Champions League. So we're keeping up with that. The Greg firing was massive for me, and I said that changed everything with my men's national team stuff. I've been keeping up with that. The question is, who do you get? I just read online, you can't mess this up. If you mess this next one up, you go into the World Cup on home soil looking like complete idiots. So. I mean,
yeah, but you got to think the manager that they hire with this move is going to be the person that takes them into the domestically hosted World Cup.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't really have time to be messing around with chemistry and messing around with lineups and national team call ups. I mean, you know, every manager has their formation and their stylistic way they like to play, tactical philosophy, if you will. So. If whoever they get, they now have to fit into that manager's style of play. And you don't really have time to be hiring and firing with less than 2 years before the World Cup starts here in Mexico, Canada, and the United States. So this is big. But before we get to that, let's talk about Let's talk about Darwin Nunez real quick. Okay, so set the stage. Last night, Colombia, Uruguay, what happens?
Yeah, so Colombia goes up on a set-piece header, which is just what they do, man. I mean, 28 straight, no losses. They're going for 29 on Sunday against Messi and Argentina. But they score a header first half, 41st minutes, and then immediately after, they get a red card. Uruguay go up a man, and watching the game, man, as someone who didn't bet on the game, watching it or not watching it, you would think Uruguay can equalize and then possibly advance. Well, news flash to you, Colombia is very good, and it actually looks
really good,
like,
yeah,
it looks like Colombia were the man up for some time there. They were giga pressing. I mean, they were chasing around that ball, getting the ball away from Uruguay very quickly. Uruguay didn't really have too much of a chance. Nunez did have a couple chances in this match where he just didn't capitalize, man. And to say that for Uruguay's side is very crazy because usually he knocks those in the back of the net.
Let me ask you this. What do you think the problem was? Because we talked, you and I just had this conversation. It's so weird how like we have a conversation and something like happens to sort of highlight that conversation days later, if you will. You and I were talking about, and it involves Darwin Nunez. We talked about how Liverpool went down to 10 men. They looked all but defeated, and then Darwin Nunez comes on, and he scores two late goals to beat Newcastle United, send Liverpool to the 3 points. Yeah. Now he's on the opposite side of that. Now, what do you think the issue was as to why this very, very good Uruguay team could not equalize with a one-man advantage?
Colombia, man, they were just so good defensively. I mean, they were literally Ben Bishop and Crawford and it was just it was incredible, man. The defensive press and what they had going on, what that manager did for Colombia, directing them to just get the ball away from Uruguay, worked, man. That's the only thing that was literally number one. When they went into halftime, that manager probably just said, press, get the ball away from Uruguay and make it happen. Do not let them score. And man, game plan was success. They did it. They went the whole 90 or whole 40, like 45 minutes without letting Uruguay score. And it was just an amazing match, man. Colombia, I don't care how much of a favorite Argentina is, Colombia looked very good, and it's going to be hard to beat them. Nunez couldn't score. Uruguay looked lost. Bielsa looked lost on the sideline, man. He was rubbing his head and hand in his face. They couldn't do it, man. They could not score.
So Bielsa, people have said that his shortcoming is his ability to not adapt. So we saw what he did with Argentina way back when. We saw what he did with was it Leeds that he helped come up, right? Was it Leeds?
Leeds,
yeah.
Yeah, he got them up, yeah.
Yeah, and then Jesse Marsh took over, yeah. Because yes. I was like, let me get my timeline right here.
Yeah,
yeah, so Bielsa, and so it was said, you know, he wasn't able to adapt to from the Championship to the Premier League. You know, some people can do it. Mm-hmm. Leicester was one of the teams under Ranieri that was able to do it and then propel that into a title, in fact. Most impressive feat still in the last decade of football, without a shadow of a doubt. So it's just usually when you go down to 10 men, it's the kiss of death.
Yeah.
And unless you're sitting there willing to say that we are absolutely going to sit in the low block, we're not coming out, we're not going to press, we're not going to counter, we are literally just going to sit here, park the bus, and see if we can hold out for, you know, however many minutes. Well, I think they got it in the 45 plus
something.
One or something?
Yeah, it was.
So basically the second half, they had to hold out the second half. And yeah, I mean, it's one of the things where you're like, okay, well, you can, it's doable, right?
Yeah.
But Colombia didn't really do that. They still went forward some.
Yeah, no, they did.
It takes guts.
They almost made it 2-0. When I had a second to look up, Colombia literally almost scored to make it 2-0. And I just was blown away at how good they were down a man. I mean, you said it best, man. That's usually the kiss of death. You can pack your bags; it's over with. But for whatever reason, Colombia did not play that.
No, they didn't.
It was incredible what they did.
So that sets the tone. Now we have the other matchup, the other semifinal was not two powerhouses by any means. It was one powerhouse and a team that's really lucky to be there, and that being the Canadians. And, you know, they have some talent. Obviously, we talked about David. We talked about Davies. They have some talent. Tajon Buchanan, unfortunately, has suffered the injury, but he is a up-and-coming player for Inter Milan. Look for big things from him. I hate that he has to be out now for 5 months with the injury. But I'll say that Canada did the best they could, but there was just no stopping this juggernaut that is Argentina in terms of, and they, and you know, you brought up a good point the other day, Nick, they haven't looked this, you know, and I talked about this, the hunger's gone. Like you win a World Cup and you, there's something to this where 2006, Italy wins the World Cup. They don't make it out of the group stage in 2010. Spain wins it in 2010. They don't make it out of the group stage in 2014. France won it in 98. They don't make it out of the group stage in 2002. And Germany wins it in 2014. They don't make it out of the group stage in 2018. Like, the hunger's gone. When you win that, you fight for it. Usually it takes a couple of generations or a couple of tournaments. Usually it takes one or two Euros or one or two Copa Americas and then a World Cup in between. And then the second World Cup's the one that you win, right? Argentina's been trying to get this since Maradona was there.
Yeah.
Well, they finally all came together in 2022. And, yeah, Messi scored. I think it was 51st minute against Canada. That basically puts the icing on the cake, 2-0. They're going to have a much, much, much different opponent in Colombia on Sunday.
That Messi goal, too, man, it was so – he's lucky he got credit for that. It was like one of those shots where the player shoots the ball towards the goal, and he kind of nicks it, and then it counts for Messi, but it was going to go in anyways. So it was like a, I don't want to say a ghost goal, but hell, that ball was going in anyways.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But yeah, you know, Messi's going to get his credit.
He is. But I'm not trying to give Argentina too much credit for beating Canada. I mean, yeah. I'm saying you're the one that has said this many times. I agree with you that you have to beat who's on your schedule.
Yes.
I mean, it is how it is.
Yeah.
You know. So Canada locked up. They you know, got a fortunate draw. They beat Venezuela. Yeah, they beat some teams. And Venezuela is not that good. We know that.
Yeah.
But Venezuela was definitely favored to go out in the group stage. They got an 11-10 man advantage in the very first game against Ecuador and ended up pulling through 2-1.
Yeah.
So that's 3 points that probably that you and I basically didn't give Venezuela. So they got through. They get fortunate. They get a good draw. And yeah, Canada was able to knock them out, get to the semis. And that's the rest is history. Yeah. But Argentina and Colombia, we're going to get to that in a minute. We're going to preview the finals. And on the other side of the globe, we have the European Championship. And that is obviously Spain and England. And so really, honestly, I think this is kind of the Nick and Critty final, because I picked England to win the whole thing. And you were been high on Spain since day one.
Yeah.
You really did have Spain going far. I didn't. I thought maybe quarterfinal for sure, semifinal they lose. And I just thought it was basically depending. I really looked at it like they can beat Germany. I said that they could, and they did.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were lucky to.
What was the score?
2-1.
2-1.
Oh, yeah, and Vert scored, and then they scored in the 119th minute. Yeah. It almost went to penalties.
With that header.
Almost went to penalties. So, you know, if it goes to penalties, then it's a coin toss, as we've said so many times.
Yeah.
But
gosh, I wonder if we give that to Neuer. Does he save the day for Germany in penalties?
Maybe. Right? Maybe. Yeah. We will never know.
Yeah.
But I definitely and you and I looked at this the France game, Mbappe with that beautiful cross setting up who was
Mane.
It? Yes. 1-0, and you said, well, this is gonna be tough, right?
Yeah.
And then within 10 minutes, Spain's up 2-1.
Yeah, and within 5 minutes it was 2-1. Yamal with the beautiful outside the box shot. I mean, Jesus, what a shot from the 16-year-old. I think he turns 17 tomorrow, so we can start.
He's got the same
17.
Birthday as me?
I think so. I think he turns 17 tomorrow.
Wow. Man,
I'll check it out. But I think they said this weekend he turns
17. That would be something if he's got the same birthday as yours truly. That
The 13th.
13th. Oh, wow, the day after.
So
okay.
Saturday.
So we're going to celebrate two birthdays, and he's going to have his birthday the day before the final. Now, so Spain has had the tougher opponents and the tougher route, and they've looked more impressive doing it.
Yes, hands down.
Now, neither team has lost a match. In fact, Spain hasn't even drawn. I think Spain
Spain
has won everything. They've had, if you they don't get points in the knockout stage, but if they could get points, they would have 18 points right now. England has the two draws and they have the four wins. So also undefeated, but they are doing it. I mean, we can just go back. Do we want to go back to the round of 16 match, the quarterfinal match, where they are just skimming by, skimming by, last minute this, last second that.
And they just did it.
They do it at the death, and they did it at the death yesterday. I mean, you know, the Ollie Watkins with a magnificent goal. Craig Burley said this. He goes, you know, win, lose, or draw, well, win or lose against Spain, Ollie Watkins will never forget that moment. Yeah. He will never forget that moment as long as he lives. He scored a game winner in a European Championship semifinal to send England through to the final against a team. I think I told you I was not going to bet. Like, when I pick a team, I pick a team and I roll with them until they get knocked out. Like, I just don't, I'm not one of these bandwagon people. I don't back up. My word is my word. My mouth is my mouth. And I stick to it until I'm knocked out. Well, England have not been knocked out, but I told you, I would not be surprised in the slightest if the Netherlands beats them. I told you, I think the Netherlands have the not the better squad, as we talked about on paper. If this tournament were on paper, England would have already this would be a no-brainer. But I thought the Netherlands had the better momentum. I thought they had also a tougher group. They had to go through France. They had to go through Austria. These were tougher opponents than what England had to face. And it just, to me, looked like a Netherlands win would not have been a shocker to anyone. As it turns out, they were 1-1 until the very end, and then Ollie Watkins comes through. So 2-1, England advances, Nick. I mean, Koeman is complaining about the refs. He's saying VAR is ruining the game. Well, you know, you're on the losing side of that.
Yeah.
VAR is great when it's you that gets the advantage, but VAR is terrible when you're the one that gets told that the Harry Kane got the penalty ultimately that was the equalizer. So Koeman believes if it had stayed 1-0, they would have won, but Kane comes on, converts, and then Ollie Watkins gets the winner. So what were your thoughts on that, on the England? What were your thoughts on Spain, France, and on England and Netherlands?
Just, I know that the ball hit Saka's hand before Kane got the penalty, and they didn't show that. I saw it after the game. I was just ignoring it. But Koeman, he did have a point. You can see the ball hit Saka's hand as Kane's sliding in and Dumfries hits Kane with his foot. So they didn't look at that, man. I mean, that penalty, I said to somebody, you and somebody else, I said it should not be a penalty. And you knew that they were going to give England the penalty, and they did, and Kane made it. I mean, if he didn't kick it, if he would have kicked it a little less harder, it could have been saved. The keeper went the right way, but when you rocket it like that, you just can't save it. So the penalty shouldn't have been given, and then as soon as Kane is taken off the pitch, man, England look alive. I just think if England want to win this final, that they need to have Kane off the pitch. I think the sooner they bring Kane off, the faster that they have a chance to win the game against Spain. The game between France and Spain, man, I mean, that was a fun one. No one expected that many goals in the first half. Hell, no one expected that many goals in the game, period. That was the first goal for France outside of a penalty, I think, for the whole tournament. They had two penalty goals and an own goal. Those are the only goals scored, so that goal was incredible. For them to get that, it was amazing. But Spain, just too good, man. Too talented, too strong. You could say the same about France, but they just weren't playing together. I think they need to fire Deschamps. He needs to go back to Marseille or something.
It's been a long ride for him, man. Yes. Like, he's been there forever. It's almost like Joachim Löw with Germany. And it's like, look, you won a World Cup. And I've said this, I'll say it again. I think when you win a World Cup, the hunger dies. That generation of players, like, you know, Mbappe's got one, Messi's got one, Thomas Müller's got one. And Thomas, we just talked about this the other day, how Thomas Müller has just disappeared after 2014 on the national team side. He was four goals, and still is, four goals behind Miroslav Klose for the World Cup all-time leading goal scorer record.
Mm-hmm.
So two Germans basically at the top there, one holds it, the other one was chasing.
And he's had two cups.
He's had two cups to get a goal and hasn't gotten anything in 2018 and got nothing in 2022. It is amazing. And I think, you know, a lot of it is to do – that's why they say, Nick, the hardest thing to do in sports is to repeat. That is, that's the hardest thing to do. And I just think that these – some of these teams, like, you know – you know, France hasn't won a European championship now in since 2000, I want to say, 2000.
A long time.
They hosted it in 2016, got to the final, lost to Portugal. That's when Ronaldo got his European championship. Yeah. So it's just, it's, you know,
it's hard.
It's hard. And Spain haven't won anything since 2012, excuse me. They won the European championship in 2012.
They did the three. They did, what is it, World Cup?
They did 08. They did 08. 10 and 12.
Yeah.
They beat Germany in both. I think they beat Germany in a final. They beat Germany in a semifinal. I think they beat Italy in the other final. And then they beat Netherlands in the World Cup final.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Which was a really good, that was a really good final. Yeah. I was really hoping Netherlands would win because they favor them. But so basically, we got in that final something we never get, which is you get a guaranteed first-time winner of a World Cup because neither Netherlands or Spain have won one. But,
oh, that's true.
But Netherlands has won a European championship. Spain's won a couple of European championships. So the record currently belongs to Germany with three. So Spain can tie that with three if they win. And England has never won a European championship. So they can get their first and their first major title since 1966. You know, we'll preview both of these. This is how we got here. We just talked about the roads of how we got to where we got to. But I wanted to talk really quick about national team news. So let's talk about Greg Berhalter real quick and his sacking, because this is a big deal. Like we said, it's all in the follow up and who they hire. Have you seen anybody that the United States may be potentially looking at? And please let's not say Jurgen Klopp, because I think that's a complete and utter fairy tale. And I told you last night, the last text I sent you was you could offer him $30 trillion. You could offer him the United States national debt in salary, and he wouldn't take it, because I think it's going to be hard to convince a foreigner like a Mourinho or somebody like that. Now, Mourinho is obviously going to Fenerbahce, but I'm just saying, like, in comparison to take this job, because it is – how do I say this? The Americans play soccer and the rest of the world plays football. Mm-hmm. And when Jurgen Klinsmann came over here, I think he had the most successful, that arguably was the most talented American side in history. And they made it to a knockout stage of the World Cup in 2014. They lost to a really, really good Belgian side 2-1. Howard played the game of his life. And you know, he was unceremoniously sacked a couple of years later. I think it was up to the qualification of the 2018 World Cup. I think it's when he got sacked. But you kind of lose the mental focus after a while if your player's like this. And, you know, but he had it working for a while. Yeah. Like I thought, you know, the United States was in a – they were consistently top 10, top 15, and they were starting to really, I feel like, gain some traction.
Yeah.
Then they go back to Old Reliable. They hire some American managers, and I just don't think that Bruce. Oh my God, Bruce Arena. Yeah, that is the name that.
Yeah, it kind of hurts
again. You have to if you're in the United States, and correct me if I'm wrong here. If you disagree, I think you have to think outside the box a little bit.
Yeah.
You have to convince someone. Like a Bielsa, someone like that, right? Someone like that, Claudio Ranieri, right? Yeah. Now, who just retired from football as a whole at the end of last season.
Yeah.
But someone like someone who's no longer looking to make a name for themselves in the on the club level. So, like, you've done it all, right? Like, so Mourinho would have been a perfect pick because he's won everything there is to win. He's won every single European continental title at the club level. He's won conference. He's won Europa. He's won Champions Leagues. He's won league titles in all the big leagues, with the exception, I think, of Germany and France. What more is there? So the only thing really left to do is the international level, right? Mm-hmm. Is there anybody that you would like to see them potentially go after?
I want to say, man, hot off the press 3 hours ago, U.S. soccer has reached out to Jurgen Klopp. And
dear Lord,
they made quote unquote initial contact with the former Liverpool manager. So they are actually giving this a shot.
They're giving it a shot. I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah.
I think that would be fantastic.
Yeah, it's funny.
Here's the question, though. So before we go on hot off the press, let's talk about it. What happened at Dortmund? He had players to fit his tactical style, yeah. But it took a minute, right?
Yeah.
What happened at Liverpool was he had plans to fit his tactical style, but it took a minute, right? Yeah. We had to go buy Salah. We had to go buy Mane. Mm-hmm. We had to go buy VVD. We had to go buy all these players, right? And then what happened? Does the American roster look like a roster to you that can play a Jurgen Klopp 4-3-3 at the moment?
Yeah. I mean, he would have to do some serious scouting, pull some players out. You got the under 23 squad playing in the Olympics this in a couple weeks. He could check that out. I mean,
Nick, is he not hamstrung though by the rule that you've talked about and the fact that there has to be a certain amount of MLS players? Yeah. So that is a very big detractor. If he were the manager of England, where he just came from club level, or Germany, where he managed Dortmund successfully, you can pick any 23 players you want.
Yeah.
England has no restrictions. Germany has no restrictions. You can pick from any pool of English players. Doesn't matter what league they play.
Whatever you want.
Any German players you play in, like Toni Kroos, oh, you play in Spain, you can't play here.
Yeah.
No, you pick the best 23. America is – what is the actual – you have to pick how many players from MLS?
I think it's like – either two or four or something like that. You have to have a certain amount of domestic players because they want the league involved. But it's the federation that does this, man, a bunch of bozos. And it's all because the owners of the MLS have their hands tied in the federation, which completely screws the American men's national team up because you don't have any good players playing in the MLS. The MLS isn't competitive or anything worth a shit. So yeah,
right.
I mean,
it
just messes up what they have going on, because if you're having to pull four or six guys from Seattle and LAFC, then you're leaving out guys who play at Brøndby or Copenhagen or Leeds or wherever they're at in Europe where they're playing at a high level. So it's silly foolishness, man, and it's all because of these owners that have their ties. The MLS club owners that have their ties with the federation, they want their guys in the game. They want their guys playing at the World Cup because they want people to watch their club. But no one is going to care about the club until things are changed with the American domestic leagues. Like we've talked about this before. So the stuff they got going on with the national team is terrible, and Klopp wouldn't put up with it. Now, I'm not one to say he's going to come. I find it funny that they're actually – a credible source, I think it was Sports Illustrated or someone, is putting that out on their.
I have no issue with them reaching out to him.
Yeah, of course. Well, I can reach out to President Trump to be my best man at my wedding. It doesn't mean he's going to do it. You know.
Well, depending on how much you like MAGA, he might.
Yeah. Well, that's
you just
true.
You have to stroke his ego. He might do it for
so
you.
So maybe if we stroke Klopp's ego, maybe we can.
That's the problem. Is that he is a guy that I think Klopp wants a little bit more of a ready-made situation this next go-around. He's built Mainz. He's built Dortmund. He's built Liverpool. He's been building everywhere he goes, okay? Yeah. And when you're young and you're full of piss and vinegar, you can do that. But Klopp is entering not the twilight of his life, God, no. I'm talking – he's entering the – let's just call it the final phase of his club managerial career, okay? Yeah. And you want something when you're like – you know, to put it in perspective – Carlo Ancelotti went to Everton and was like, I'm going to build something here. And he was there only for a very short time. But he was the guy that broke the Liverpool streak of consecutive wins over Everton at Anfield. He did that because he's a genius like that.
Yeah.
When you're at the end of it, where he's going to retire, like Ancelotti, this is his final stop on the subway route, right?
Yeah.
This is it. Train 6 is landing, stopping, whatever.
Yep.
That's it. Buckle up. This is it. But he went to Real Madrid, where he literally just has to manage. He doesn't have to go scout. Like you have a basically a 92 dream team of players. I mean, basketball, like Michael Jordan dream team of players in the equivalent of football at Real Madrid.
Yeah.
You just have to manage. And so, yes, when you get to the final four of a UCL, like a UEFA Champions League, you have to manage because you're playing Bayern Munich, you're playing Borussia Dortmund, you're playing PSG. You give Ancelotti that kind of talent, he can do it.
Yeah.
I am worried. The worry I would have is, does Klopp have Are there 23 Americans that he can pull from, Nick, that can compete at a World Cup? That's my question to you.
I mean, I don't. It's funny.
Not everybody's a Pulisic, or you know. And Reyna right now was on the outs with Berhalter. Yeah. I think that Reyna could benefit from Klopp being.
Oh, he will. Yeah, 100%. He'll flourish whenever whoever comes in next. I also want to say that the women sued the men for equal pay, and something that was in the settlement was that whoever manages the men and whoever manages the women, guess what? They have equal pay. So if they get Jurgen Klopp for $10 million, guess who else gets $10 million?
The women's national team
manager. So whatever the men do and whoever they hire, if they get a big name, guess what, Bucko? You got to pay the woman too. The woman's manager also the same amount. So you got to keep that in mind. Now, will they throw 10 or 20 million at somebody? Who the hell knows? They're going to have to double it up though and pay the women's coach that. So I don't know if they're really going to. As far as the pool goes, I watch football overseas, man, and there's a lot of Americans who don't get seen. There's an American in a Belgian league that I like who plays striker, and he doesn't even get looked at because there's people on the roster that are just there for vibes and just because of the name and just because of Greg Berhalter. So now that Berhalter's on his way out, or he is out, then maybe whoever does come in can actually look at this guy who's playing in Belgium or the guys who are playing in Denmark or in Finland, and they can actually get a chance, because I promise you the talent's there. There's guys playing in the college system or in the Chelsea under 16 or 18, because Chelsea is big on getting young Americans. I have a friend who played over there. Of course, he didn't cut it, but anyways, they get Americans also. They're owned by an American who actually has a house on Sullivan's Island, for Christ's sake. So
Todd Boehly lives here?
Yeah, he has a house on Sullivan's Island. Yeah, I know. I found this out a year ago and laughed. So the pool's there.
That makes me want to go find it.
I know. Well, he's come to eat where Jennifer works, and she's seen him. And I wish she would have told me, because I would have drove there.
Yeah, I'm going to fly a Liverpool banner in front of his house.
Yeah, shake his hand and ask him what the hell he's doing to the club. So, yeah, there's people out there, man. It's just going to be a matter of getting the right guy in to look at him. But I will tell you this. This is going to completely change who's playing, and it's going to change everything. And hopefully it'll be for the better. I think it will be, because Greg, ever since he came back for the second stint, it was nothing but a downslide. Everything got worse. There was no progression. It was all regression.
No progression at all.
They did worse. So now that he's gone, even Pulisic said there's good things to come. Things will change for the better, man. These guys will get a look who don't get a look with Greg, and I think there will be competition to play for the U.S. These guys at the Olympics are going to be playing their behinds off because they want to get seen for the World Cup that's in their backyard in 2 years. So this is a big positive. I told you, I said, when Greg goes, I'm all for him. But as of right now, I hope they lose. And they did just that. They couldn't beat Panama. They couldn't beat Uruguay. So guess what? Bye-bye, Greg.
You know, the thing is, and I've said this, like, I grew up in Germany. So Germany's my national team in terms of, like, a priority. But I live in America. I live in South Carolina. And I want I hate being the laughing stock of the football world. Yeah. I hate – and the thing is, there's a lot of teams worse than the United States in football. There's a lot. But they're not hype beasts.
Yeah.
You don't hear about Vietnam being talked about as, oh, this is the year that Vietnam's going to win the Copa. This is the year that Vietnam's going to – the Philippines China. China's going to win. Dude, China can't even qualify for a World Cup, much less – think about winning one. But how many times have we heard this is the year? This is the year for the United States men's national team. This is the year that they win more than a gold cup, or they win more than a CONCACAF bullshit cup. This is and every single time, and I go back to 2006 when they were ranked number 4 in the world in Germany, and they completely flopped. One point in the group stage, they got knocked out by Andriy Shevchenko, Ukraine. Czech Republic destroyed them. I think I speak for both of us when I say, considering the fact that we live in this country, we want this team to do well. We have no issue with the women. The women kick ass. Like, you know, even though they didn't make it, you know, to the final or win the World Cup, they still make it the knockout stage.
Yeah.
They're still respected. They've won 4 World Cups. I don't know. They have nothing to prove, right? Yes. And we talked about Lindsey Horan. She's awesome. She's the captain now. Just a phenomenal player. I can't say enough good about the women, yes. But I'm saying that they and they lost to a really good side too, by the way, in the knockout stage last time, this time around. Like there's other good teams. Like the world is like they're not just gonna let the women, the U.S. women, just dominate. People are gonna. That's the way you create other good teams. Is that competition makes you better.
Yeah.
The United States men's national team, though, is the complete opposite. There's a lot of hype. There's always a lot of talk. And I hope the Pulisic's right that there is good to come, because you and I both want them to do well. I would love to wear – I have a Pulisic kit. I bought it just 2 weeks ago. I actually the new one. I think it's gorgeous. Yeah, that now has a stain on it.
Yeah.
That kit has a stain on it because they were humiliated. And you know what? Let's talk about this real quick, Nick, about the terms of like how Greg led to his – how it was led to his demise. Now, he blames – one singular red card against Panama.
Yeah.
If they beat Panama, because they had already beaten, who was it in the very first game? They beat Bolivia.
Yeah, three,
if they
two,
beat Panama, the Uruguay game doesn't even matter.
Yeah.
But they
and
lost.
We talked about that before it started. We were like, they could win the first two games and they don't even, it don't matter.
Right. And you and I thought that.
Yeah.
So here's my question to you. Do you really believe that his body of work, what was he, the manager for a year, about a year or thereabouts?
Yeah, a couple. Greg was there.
No. This second stint, he was there a year, right?
Stint. Yeah.
Was it even
a
calendar
over
year?
A year.
A little over a year. Okay. So, is his entire second tenure? Does it come down to one red card against Panama? That's why he got sacked. Because I don't think if they advance and they lose in the quarterfinal, they still made the knockout stage. I don't think we're having this conversation about it.
Yeah, USA would have had to play Colombia.
And they would have said, well, we're not favored anyway.
Yeah.
But, you have to do better than 5-0 in the friendly.
Yeah.
That they lost right before. Remember, they got humiliated.
Or 5-1.
Was it 5-1? Okay, yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't give them their goal that they so rightfully deserve. Yeah. I'm sorry. I left Timothy Vea. I'm so sorry, man. Yeah. I forgot all about you.
Yeah, didn't he score that goal?
He did. He did. But look, man. 5-1, 5-0.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Right. So my point is, do you really believe that it came down to one match against Panama that was his demise?
It was his leadership and his development of his youth in Timothy Weah that caused that red card. If you saw the red card, it was just some trash talk, and he literally like headbutted the guy. Because he's whispering sweet nothings in his ear. Now, if he were to teach him and show him that the trash talk don't mean anything, then Weah could have not headbutted the guy. You see what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
your leader tells you, hey, don't let these guys get in your head. Hey, don't let these guys get in your head. Don't let them talk shit. Who cares if they say anything about your mom or your dad? It doesn't matter. We're going to beat them on the pitch.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? It didn't work. He let it get in their head. Greg Berhalter didn't show him or teach him that trash talk doesn't matter.
Right.
He headbutted somebody and they got a red card. So I blame him even for the red card, and I blame him for anything before or afterwards, man. It's not the red card's fault. It's Greg's way of teaching and developing those youth, because Timothy Weah isn't nothing but 2022.
Already plays for Juventus.
Yes, he's playing in Europe, man, with good player.
The top 10 club in Europe.
Yes, man. So for no reason should he be letting or having a player on his team act like he's 16 years old or acting like he's Ron Artest 2.0. You can't have these guys.
No, Nunez is well taking care of that.
Yes. So it's Greg can blame whatever he wants, man. It's Greg's development. It's Greg's tactic, his mindset. I mean, I remember when he came in, he said, What does football in America like? They like action. What does action equal? Action equals goals. What do goals equal? It equals possession. Mm-hmm. What does possession equal? Great passing and keeping the ball. Well, guess what? He did none.
Sometimes we've talked about also how Germany, the national team, leading up to this tournament, this is where I was so down on them, is because they really hadn't performed well in friendlies or anything for that matter. In quite a long time, and they had a little bit of a run at the last European Championship. They got knocked out by England, who were the best team and who were the hosts, even though they weren't supposed to be the hosts. COVID made that happen. So I could argue, well, as a German fan, right? I could argue, well, if it hadn't been in England, they would have won or they could have, you know. But, you know, it is what it is, man. Like, England were better than Germany in 2021. They were. And I say that as a Germany supporter. Like, they were. They were. And England are better right now than Germany. By a hair on paper. But you get this German team, the one that showed up for this Euro on home soil. I think that's the team that maybe knocks England out. Maybe they are the ones that, but they don't, but they don't. And I told you they were this close. They were this close to matching up. They were very close to matching up. And England saved it on
the
final.
Lucky.
They did get lucky. They absolutely got lucky because they would have been. I don't think we're talking about England and Spain. We're talking about maybe. I think Spain and Germany would have met.
Yeah, they could have met in the semifinals.
So we're probably talking about Netherlands and Spain, or somebody like that.
England would have definitely been out.
So it just is what it is. But like possession. The Germans always have possession, but they weren't winning games. So I don't agree with that. And how many times we talked about Liverpool had possession so many times last season, 70%, 72%. And then, you know, Burnley gets the one counter, one shot on goal, one counter. Allison gets beat 1-0 and then they park the bus.
That's what you do with
possession. Doesn't matter if you don't do something constructive with it. So I, everything else that the game plan that you said about what Berhalter's plan was sounds all well and good, but the possession part is a that's a kind of a catch 22 because possession does not equal wins. It does not.
Sure doesn't. Hell, if it did, God, you're right. Liverpool would have won the title. All that.
Well, how many times do we talk about Real Madrid? I mean, Real Madrid conceding possession. We just did a Champions League final preview. What, 2 months ago or a month and a half ago? Wasn't 2 months ago.
They had 30% possession.
They were, we said that they would let Dortmund have possession. And Dortmund had possession the first half. They were the better team in the first half. Real Madrid absorbed it. They were able to skate by with a 0-0. And we said, look, if Dortmund doesn't convert their chances,
then they lose.
Then they're gonna, it's gonna be hell to pay in the second half. Because if they were up 2-0, like they should have been. Then maybe we're talking about a different European champion, and maybe we're talking about Royce goes out as the greatest John Elway since John Elway. But
they would have won that game. If they were
Yeah, because then Dortmund can park the bus.
Which they were very good at.
So the point is that
possession don't win.
So the U.S. I wanted to close this out. Let's just assume the Klopp's not coming. Okay, let's go ahead and assume that because I don't think he is. But I say. Great for reaching out to him. He's the best manager available in the whole world right now that doesn't have a current job. So not getting him, is there anyone else you, Nick, would like to see or that you, Nick, would consider for the job that you think can actually make it these next 2 years and do what Greg and what Bruce and what every other asshole really since Jurgen Klinsmann was unable to do? And really Klinsmann only to a certain degree. Can you improve this team? Can you make them better? And can you get them deeper into tournaments? Can you get to a quarterfinal for the first time in a World Cup and not have to beat Mexico to do it? Because we all know what beating Mexico means these days. No offense to Mexico. Well, anybody you'd like to see?
I mean, the list is funny. I saw Pochettino.
Jesus Christ.
Pochettino.
I'm okay. Okay. I'm listening.
Henri from the French.
Thierry Henry?
Yes. Thierry Henry.
Dude, he's having a great job doing commentary for Champions League.
CBS.
CBS, baby. Paramount Plus.
They're talking about him because don't forget, he played in the MLS.
He did, but he sucked at Monaco.
Yes, and he was bad. And that I'm just the likelihood.
I mean, as a manager, guys, not as a player. I'm talking about, he was a bad manager at Monaco. Didn't they almost get relegated?
They did. Gareth Southgate's been brought up because
Marsh is Canada now.
Even though he did. So the likelihood for your boy nose picker, Joachim Löw, he's even been thrown around. Wilfred Nancy, the Columbus.
Say what you want about the nose picker. I don't care what you say about him. He won.
He won.
The German national team was a juggernaut under him.
He just didn't care when the camera was on him when he picked his nose. That's why.
7-1 against Brazil in Rio. I don't need to say anything more, do I?
He did good. Like I said, he's just not embarrassed to pick a booger, so that's okay.
I'll take all the boogers for a World Cup any day.
So
he also scratches his crotch.
Non-stop. It's like a camera doesn't exist. I'm telling you, he's one of the guys where it didn't matter what was going on. He was gonna itch his scratch his itch no matter what.
Yeah. Man, I'm glad all the kids over there at the pool are over there at the pool. Like, they're well far away from us because. Anyways.
So you got David Wagner, like the old guy who was at.
He was at Huddersfield, right?
Yeah, he's Klopp's. Huddersfield.
Huddersfield too, because he was. I think he was the best man at Klopp's wedding.
Yes.
Yeah. But they're good friends.
So apparently his likelihood is very high. He's like a 6 out of 10 for likelihood.
See, I wouldn't mind seeing that.
Yeah.
I see, now that's somewhat German guy. Took a minnow to the Premier League. That's what I like. I want to see somebody that can take dog shit and make it into chicken.
Yes.
And make it to chicken salad.
So he's a graduate of Jurgen Klopp's school of heavy metal. Wagner, he was evangelist of intense counter-pressing football.
Heavy metal
and
he football,
built
baby.
His reputation with Borussia Dortmund's reserves under Klopp before taking his head coaching role in England. Where he got Huddersfield promotion, and then he was sacked by Norwich this past season. So you're right. That's actually something that's actually pretty likely also. So who would I like to see? I'd like to see a foreigner for one. I don't want to see Columbus Crew's manager. I don't want to see LAFC's manager. I don't want to see it. Get someone foreign and get someone who has some freaking experience with with European ball, so we can keep up with the world, man. I don't want to see a Columbus Crew manager. I just don't.
Right. I so agree with you on that.
That is all I want to see. You get me someone foreign who knows what they're doing, bring it on. Don't get Gareth Southgate. I'm done. I'm already. He's single-handedly made me despise what England has become. And as soon as he's fired, I'll be all for it.
You know what's weird, though? This is the irony of Gareth Southgate. He literally could walk away Sunday as the greatest England manager since the 60s.
Yeah.
Because you got to say this, right?
Yeah.
Whoever wins the European Championship, they're the champion. So we're not going to dispute it. Spain wins, England wins. So Southgate literally can walk away with the greatest accomplishment in England national team history in 6 decades.
Yeah.
So it's just funny. So do we think there's any chance at all that if he wins this, that he might be retained? And let me ask you this. Even if he does become a free agent, and honestly, if I'm him, I probably walk away because he's faced so much criticism. They're basically going to look at this like England won in spite of him.
Yeah.
England won in spite. That's how good, and Nick, we talked about this, how good this roster is. This England team, yes or no, this England team on paper is either the best or the second best team in the world.
Hands down.
Okay. Thank you. They may win the European Championship in spite of him.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
Do you want him to coach the United States men's national team?
No, man. I wouldn't want him anywhere near my team. Even whenever they were talking about him going to United, United fans were sick to their stomach because they know how bad and how terrible he is, as far as tactically and man managing. He can't do it. I mean, what he's done with England, he's very fortunate that he has made it this far. But even if he wins, I think they won't keep him. And Lord have mercy, keep him away from the United States men's national team.
You know, if it were myself next, if it were after next season, I think Ancelotti's going to do one more year or. I think it's one more year. I thought he signed like a little extension. It may be two, but if it were one, I would love to see him just take a 2-year spin with the United States to see what he could do with it. Because the downside I see to Klopp is I think Klopp needs personnel to be successful because he is so regimented in the fact that he runs this particular tactical philosophy, and you have to be able to gegenpress, you have to be able to run, you have to be able to basically play that heavy metal football that he likes to play. Ancelotti's adaptable. He managed Bayern, he managed Everton, he managed Real Madrid, he managed AC Milan. All of those clubs, you know, he had different personnel, and wherever he went, he was successful. So I think that Ancelotti's much more like, if you give him a ball of clay, he can mold it very quickly into what he wants it. Whereas Jurgen Klopp's going to create a masterpiece for you. He's going to create Michelangelo's David, but it's going to take him 2-3 years to get the chiseling down and all this stuff, you know, just hammer out the kinks, if you will. And we just said this at the top of the program, United States men's national team does not have that much time.
No.
We're less than 2 years away from the 2026 World Cup kicking off. And this is a big decision. It's going to potentially be the biggest hire in USMNT history.
Yes. Yeah. You got it right in your backyard coming in 2 years. You better get it together because this is the whole world's eyes will be on our football.
Beautiful.
No idea what that was.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Sounded pretty
good. Hey, so let's switch focus. Yeah. I don't know what that was. Yeah. Let's switch focus real quick to, we're going to preview these two massive matches coming up on Sunday. This has got, so we've talked about, and real quick, is there anything leading up to Nunez on this ban? Let's look at the most recent news.
I can look, man. I still am not seeing.
Because I've heard that he might be getting a potential ban. I don't know whether that's going to be club or whether it's going to be international. And what I told you
54 minutes ago. Yeah. Here. Okay. Yeah. So it's expected to bring a suspension.
So, but what level?
It says players matching things. This is a disaster. Yes, it is. What are the it'll be call and ball. So they strongly condemn any acts of violence that affects football. Suspensions could be coming Nunez's way, as well as any other players and staff identified as throwing punches. So nothing announced yet. Any ban imposed by call and ball wouldn't carry over to Liverpool. But if FIFA decided to step in and take matters into their own hands, that's where it could impact both club and international football. If FIFA let Colin Ball handle it, then Nunez would likely be clear to play for Liverpool. It says, how will Liverpool handle it? Liverpool would like to meet with Nunez and the Uruguayan FA in order to get to the bottom of it. And then because it didn't occur in a game for Liverpool, it seems unlikely the Reds will punish him.
Yeah, so the only thing we were talking earlier today that I said that could potentially impact that is conduct unbecoming of a Liverpool player that the club could say, look, you know, you still represent the badge when you play for your country.
You're still a Liverpool player. Yeah, don't act like an idiot.
Right. You play far more matches for us than you play for them.
Yes.
And I don't care who you favor. If you're country above club or club above country, you still play for both. And whatever actions you take are actions that reflect both. So all I said was, while it was, you know, thousands and thousands of miles happened away from Anfield, and by no means in a red shirt, actually he wasn't wearing a shirt at all.
Yeah.
I guess he was wearing his little sports bra. He had a little sports bra on and got his fucking teeth kicked in by some. I mean, if you're gonna do it like Arteta and at least knock the fan out. Like, you know,
beat people up.
Yeah, don't sit there and get your ass kicked.
Yes.
Oh my God, but. I was just saying that it could be something internal that Liverpool says, look, we're going to give you a 3-match ban because you can't do that while you're playing for the Reds.
Yeah.
So.
God, man. He got rocked. I mean, bro.
Yeah. Well, speaking of, okay, so that competition, CONMEBOL and the Copa America. So the final, Nick, is Argentina and Colombia on Sunday. And we also have the European Championship. Spain and England. So let's go ahead and start with the CONMEBOL. Let's go ahead and start with Argentina and Colombia. So what are we looking to see here? So we've talked about the fact that Argentina look a little bit out of sorts. They got a reprieve because they got to play a Canada side that is not the strongest in the world. They get a nice 2-0 win. It's you know, nothing to write home about, but again, you play who you have to play.
Yeah.
Colombia survived 10 men. One man down to 10 men, 1-0. They get the win, and so we're having the two best teams in this competition. One of them, which hasn't lost since February of 2022, which the last team to beat them was Argentina.
Yeah.
So history here, right? History is looming here, as in Argentina could be the first team to beat Colombia since Argentina did it. Yeah. 2.5 years ago. Now, do we think that's going to happen, Nick? I'll let you open up. What do you think about this match? What do you expect to see? Are we going to get to see Lautaro Martinez start? Because, you know, that was a thing that you and I talked about the other night, is why is he – he's one of the best players – one of the best players in Europe. He's one of the best players in the world. He's top two or three players in Italy, Serie A.
Yeah.
And he is the best player for Inter Milan, who just won the Scudetto, obviously. So, you obviously, he's going to start the final, right? Or am I wrong? Am I expecting too much? Am I expecting this the manager to make a what I would consider to be a idiotic mistake?
I texted you that, and it's funny. I was like, man, I don't know why they're starting Alvarez over Lautaro. Like, what's going on? What's happening? And then I was talking to somebody at the bar while the game was on, and I'm like, man, this is crazy, because I texted you, and not 3 minutes later, Alvarez scored. I was like, well, he shut me up.
He did. Yeah. Alvarez actually.
Yeah. He scored the first goal and blew me away. I don't get it. I don't know if they're trying to use Lautaro as like, and if we need him kind of thing, he should start in the final. I do expect to see him start, because you can play Alvarez with him. That's not a problem. You can have Messi behind him. You can have Di Maria on one of the wings. You could play those two up front and play two up front and three behind him. You could do all kinds of stuff with that lineup they have. I hope to see Lautaro start. I want to see him start. We'll see what the manager decides here. I don't know what I expect, though, from Colombia, man. I mean, you got to think they're going to be defensive-minded. You want to shut down Argentina. Do you go at Argentina and open yourself up for a messy counter and Alvarez at pace and Lautaro sitting up there? I don't think you do. So I'm expecting a tight game. I wouldn't dare think to see a bunch of goals, even though it could happen. I think both teams are going to be a little reserve in the first half, and then it could possibly open up a little later. I don't know, man. This right here is as tight as it gets, man. I mean, how do you pick? Do you pick the team that's not lost in 28 straight? Do you pick the defending champion with Messi and Lautaro and Alvarez? Like, how do you even go about that? It's a hard one.
The match against Ecuador, so they had Messi and Martinez started up front. That's who they had. They were playing a 4-4-2. You had Molina, Romero, Martinez, Tagliafico. That's the back line. The midfield is Gonzalez, Fernandez, McAllister, and DePaul, and then Messi and Martinez up front. Martinez actually was rated the third best player for Argentina, had a higher rating than Messi in that match. And then the next match, he's benched.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It doesn't make much sense to me. Am I just missing something here?
No, I don't know, man. I don't know. You would think you'd see Lautaro just up front no matter what, right? I mean, the guy's banging in goals for one of the best sides in Europe. I mean, me and you both thought Inter Milan beat Atletico Madrid. They could have won the Champions League. So, I mean, leaving him out is big.
In that game, though, actually, Ecuador had more shots than Argentina, 9-8, and they both had two on target. And they both hit one. Yeah. So there was one on penalties. We can't sit there and say Argentina. So that's what we talked about, where we thought Argentina does not look like 2022 Argentina.
No,
and I said they got a very, 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 very gracious semifinal draw with Canada.
Yeah. I if I had to pick one, it would be Colombia, just because they've had the harder stretch and they can definitely shut down anybody. They shut down Uruguay, who were one of the hottest teams on the planet. I would pick Colombia just because Uruguay – I mean, Argentina don't look like the Argentina of late, just like you said.
Everything pretty much stayed the same for Argentina, except Alvarez started and Lautaro was on the bench. The starting 11 was almost the same. Montiel was in there, and McAllister actually started outside mid. Di Maria was in too as well.
Yeah, so Argentina is a favorite, -170. Colombia is +140. Player of the tournament is going to probably go to James Rodriguez. He's -135.
Unreal, too, with him.
Yeah. How he's been playing has been incredible. He had an assist yesterday on the corner kick. Lautaro is the top goal scorer. There's no way Nunez can catch up. Obviously, he's out. Lautaro's -1200 to win that. So, yeah, man. Colombia's the slight underdog. I would put the money there just because Argentina have not looked the same. But, yeah, man, this is going to be an epic final. I really think it is, man. I think this is going to be a big final, and I do think Argentina could fall. They just don't look
like that unstoppable side. I think you can agree. I mean,
look at the player ratings though, Nick. I mean, James Rodriguez and Luis Diaz, both 4.6 out of 5 rating. Cordoba had a 4.3. Lerma had 4.5. Rios 4.4. I mean, everyone for Colombia performed a man down or not. I mean, Munoz got the red card. I'm assuming everyone for Colombia had above a 4.2 rating. That is insane. He had a 3.5, and I'm assuming he had a 3.5 because he got a red card.
Yeah. Yeah.
The whole team. Yeah. I mean, that is insane to have a whole team above 4. Was it 4.2? 4.2.
Yeah.
That is insane. That incredible. Is insane. They, you know, and like Nunez straight up 3.4, De La Cruz 3.1, Arroyo 3.1. So, I mean, Uruguay was far, far inferior to Colombia when it came to actually like the 90 minutes played on the pitch.
Yeah, the incomplete passes, the bad passes, the bad finishing for Uruguay really killed them in that. And I attribute that to Colombia. I mean, they've shown that they're hard to score on, and they've shown that they are the better side, everybody they've played against. And I don't think it's going to be any different for Argentina. I just don't. I think Argentina is going to need Di Maria or somebody on the outskirts, someone that we're not talking about, to step up and really put the dagger to Colombia for them to lose, because Colombia has been absolutely lights out.
Yeah, they have been. And the other thing I would like to mention is the fact that it's a little bit of a contrast of styles in the fact that, you know, so Colombia is going to probably play their 4-2-3-1. Argentina is going to come out in that classic 4-4-2. That some would tell you is a dying style and is, you know, is definitely an Ancelotti pick, 4-4-2. He loves that formation. But, you know, there's definitely, these are not the same team in terms of tactical philosophy. So we're going to see, I think you're going to see a lot more risks taken by Colombia. Would you say, what do you think on that?
No, I don't know, man. I honestly can see Colombia playing that press in D and asking Argentina
to keep possession.
Yes, and then they'll just hit them on a counter, because what's going to happen is Colombia is going to score on that free kick or on that corner kick like they have the whole tournament. And then guess what? It's 1-0, and then they hold you, and then you can't score, and then it's night-night. They win the whole tournament.
Uruguay had 62% possession.
Yes.
Colombia only had 38%, but with that 38%, they had twice as many shots on target in the exact same amount of total shots. So you're right. I mean, it sounds like Colombia is going to absorb the pressure and wait for Argentina to make a mistake, which they will at some point.
Yep.
And then you look down the wing, you're going to have Lerma, Diaz, Cordoba streaking down, looking to make that goal. And if Colombia go up 1-0, it's going to be hard to break.
Very hard. Yeah. It'll take a referee calling a penalty or something stupid, and then we'll have the controversy for the match. So I don't know, man.
Colombia can also score, though. Yeah. They can do when they get the ball. They can do stuff with it. I mean, it's not like this is a team like a Burnley that is inept, that doesn't have – and I'm sorry to pick on Burnley, but I'm going with a team that basically never has possession and has to rely on other stuff to score, like counters and you basically fucking up.
Yeah.
And Colombia's not that. They if they want to be offensive, they can be offensive.
Yeah.
They can absolutely go forward. They can absolutely do stuff with the ball. They are not a put you to sleep type of team. They are very good. They're very creative. Diaz himself is one of the most creative players in the world. Now, obviously, I had a problem with his creativity. Sometimes at Liverpool, he's too creative and ends up basically just kicking it off people's faces. Yeah. But, you know, there's no one that can really cook someone on the wing dribbling right now. I mean, even Mbappe. I mean, I think Diaz is just like, he can just twist you up in a pretzel.
He can.
So
absolutely.
There's a lot to like about this Colombia team, and I do have them as slight favorites, personally.
Yeah.
I'm going to predict them to win the Copa America with a 2-1 final over Argentina. Oh, yeah.
No, that's not bad. I think we're going to see another probably 1-0, man. I'll take Colombia also. I don't see the way Argentina is playing, unless they flip some switch and really get that hunger back and that fight to really win another Copa America, their second in a row, then they will do that. But I don't see them stopping Colombia. I would love to see Colombia win it. And Colombia is looking to be one of the best international sides. I mean, you throw this Colombian side right now into and to say Euros, I mean, it begs the question, where could they end? Could they end in the quarters or semis? I think they could. They're playing that well. I'm going to go 1-0 Colombia, and we'll give the goal to James Rodriguez. He's not going to assist. He's going to score it, and he will win player of the tournament. And then he'll probably be sold from Sao Paulo to Manchester United for a second stint in Europe.
All right. So we both have Colombia taking home the Copa America, and I think deservedly so if they were able to. I mean, they've definitely had the harder path. They've had to play Brazil. They've had to play Uruguay. There's been very few easy matches for them, so this would be well-deserved. We shift now to the European Championship, and we have two other juggernauts as well here, and that would be Spain and England. So if you look at it, you know, Spain immediately, Colo comes out 9th minute, they go down 1-0, and then within 4 minutes, Yamal and Olmo get the 1-1 equalizer and the 2-1 advantage, and they kept that for the next 65 minutes on to a win over France to advance to the final. Now, lineups-wise, you know, if you look at the performances, you know, this is very evenly matched. You had a lot of threes and 3.3s, 3.5, 3.7s. Really, Danny Olmo was the one outstanding player. Had a, you know, 4.2 rating. He had a very complete game, not just the goal, but a very complete game. But Navas, Nacho, Laporte, Cucurella, you even made a comment about how stupid Cucurella was on one of those errors.
Yeah.
And, and the thing that I guess that gives me some hope here is that I want to say, when I say hope, that England will, you know, have a chance to actually do something besides winning penalties.
Yeah.
Simon is not prime Casillas. And that is where, like, the 2010 or 2008 Spanish national team, Casillas at that time in his prime was probably the best keeper in the world. If not best keeper, then top three without a shadow of a doubt. So Simon is he's good, but he's not great.
Yeah.
And Ollie Watkins, you know, if Kane can get his ass out of midfield where he thinks he's a central attacking midfielder or a false nine or something, I don't know what has got into him in terms of like his want and need and desire to drop back.
Yeah.
But and there's dropping back and then there's dropping back. And he is not offensive enough for me going forward and just hasn't been aggressive and looked like himself. Look, he doesn't look like the Bayern or Spurs Kane. It looks like he's trying to be Bobby Firmino without any knowledge of how to be Bobby Firmino. But that's the weird thing. But, you know, you look at the other side, not the greatest match from Upamecano. I've had my problems with him. Tchouaméni picked up a yellow card. Rabiot also not that great. Best player for France was Mbappe. He had the assist to Colo. Those two linked up, so they get the highest rating by default. But Ousmane Dembele was okay, really not great. Koundé, Hernandez, Saliba. It just, you know, France, to me, they after the goal, they were very average. They just didn't really do much. Spain got the 2-1 advantage and they just hung on.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree, man. I really wasn't expecting France to even get that goal. So them to score and go up was really a chance for them to do something. And then they just couldn't do anything afterwards, man. I mean, Spain shut them down. I actually watched the match on and off, and I mean, the French just couldn't answer. Mbappe couldn't respond. He couldn't score that goal to tie it. Griezmann came on, couldn't really do anything either, man. Spain just frustrated the hell out of them, and there was nothing they could do. I really like what Spain's doing, man. The youth they have mixed with the veterans has really equaled a final visit to in the Euros. And I didn't think France would beat them, and they didn't. And it's going to be really hard for England. England, Kane, I think the sooner they get Kane off the pitch, the sooner they have a chance to possibly go up.
Okay, so let's discuss that. Based on the name on the back of the kit, Harry Kane, Golden Boot winner in Germany, do you honestly think that he won't play the full 90 minutes against Spain?
No, he probably.
Do you think Southgate's really going to tempt that?
Well, he took him off at 70 or 75.
He did.
For the goal.
But this is the final.
Yeah. Well, that was the semifinal to get to the final. So it was still the biggest match that they had been to at that moment.
Yes.
So they didn't know for sure they were going to the final yet. And he still pulled them off, pulled Kane off.
And Watkins scores the winner.
Yes. And the guy he puts in scores the winner. Southgate is not very smart when it comes to stuff, but he has to see.
Especially not subs.
Yes. He has to see that Kane was a hindrance. So he took him off. And then the goal scored and then they advanced. Kane will probably play the 90 and watch. That'll be the demise, man. I mean, Kane right now, everybody sees it. You're crazy if you say it's not. Just because of who he is and how he played this season, he gets to continuously see the pitch, and it is hindering your England. When he was taken off, they scored the winner, and they went to the final. I'm telling you, as a person who could care less, England win cool, Spain win cool, the sooner they get Kane off, the faster they could possibly get that winner and win the game. Because with Kane's off, they finally have someone up front who is actually trying to attack and score instead of have run back in the middle of the pitch trying to tell, you know, a midfielder what to do. It makes no sense. When I see Kane in the middle of the field, I'm scratching my head wondering what the hell's going on.
Who's instructing him to play this?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, who is not, and also who is not telling him, hey, get back up front where you need to be so you can head that ball or get the rebound for the goal. Like, what are you doing? So if that changes, I really think England could win this game. But if not, man, it's going to be hell on earth for England.
Well, we know that Ivan Toney and Ollie Watkins are scorers, and they're going to be up front. They're not going to do some weird midfield hybrid crap where they think they're trying to, you know, basically channel their inner Lionel Messi or like I said, Bobby Firmino, where you're a false nine. Kane played so differently for Spurs and Bayern Munich from how he's playing for England. And I can't imagine that Southgate is so moronic that he can't see that and be like, well, you know, we're going to change your role up for the European Championship and put ourselves at a disadvantage.
Yeah. It's like, what are you? Yeah.
He's a goal scorer. Yeah. Get up front. Be the poacher. Be the target man. That's what you are. You're not a false nine. You're not a number 10. You're not a central attacking mid. Or whatever the hell you think you are. I don't like, it's so weird to see, and it's England's side passes and back passes and side passes, and you know, it's comical, man. It's like,
it really is.
This is the team that wins despite not going forward. How the hell does that happen?
Yeah. I mean,
and I'm not mad about it because I picked them to win. So great. I look smart, but I'm not looking smart in a very pretty way.
No, and I said this to someone last night. I said, these magical individual moments will run out. Eventually, that will run out.
Yes.
And the time it usually typically does is at the very end where you need action play from your team and you need everyone doing their job correctly instead of a magical moment from Saka, magical moment from Ollie Watkins, magical bicycle kick from Jude Bellingham. Guess what? That eventually will run out.
Yeah.
Now, can it continue into the final? Of course it can, but chances are against them in that, and I would feel as an English fan, you would want your team to play well instead of waiting till the 90th or the 83rd minute to get a freaking winner. So that's what I think it's going to come down to is, are you going to count on the individual talent or are you going to play correct football?
Yeah, and the other thing is too, I would say that for Spain, it's, you know, this is a rebuilt side. You know, we talked about this. You've talked about it in terms of the way that they play as opposed to like the Iniesta sides and
The tiki taka.
Yeah. Tiki taka, you know, that kind of Pep Guardiola style of play. Who else? Busquets was on that team.
Well, I'll say it's changed.
It's changed, right? Spain.
Remember a couple years ago, they had 800 passes in a World Cup match and it went 0-0. You're not seeing that anymore.
Yeah.
They have changed that. This is different. This isn't that same 900 passes a game and no goals. Like, it has actually changed for the good.
Yeah. Yeah. So, This is kind of like the second coming of Spain. This is like their resurfacing, reemergence after a few disappointing big cups, we'll say, right? So for England, this is it, right? Like, I think that this roster has pretty much been intact now for, let's say, 2018. They made that semifinal run to the World Cup. Yeah. Then they made the final run in the Euro 2021, kind of unceremoniously dumped out of the World Cup in 2022 by France. And now they're back in the final again in a European championship. So in three of the last four competitions, as we said, they have at least made it to the semifinal. This is kind of it, right? I mean, this golden era, because Kane is not getting any younger.
No.
Trent is, you know, like those players, 26. Foden's
not
young,
getting any better.
But Foden is not impressed in this tournament at all. Jude is young. But, like, this core group, though, the core group that we were talking about here.
Yeah, Stones, Kane, Pickford.
Stones has got to be gone. He's getting, yeah.
There's guys who it's getting, you're
keepers
right.
Typically have a longer shelf life, so Pickford might be able to play. I think he'll be there in 2026. Yeah, Kane is already looking like.
Yeah, Kane, I would get him out. Yeah. Let Tony.
A lot can happen in 2 years. Yeah. And Ollie Watkins, as we talked about, had a very, very high conversion rate in terms of what he did in the Premier League this past season in the league. And right now he looks to be the more dangerous number, you know, the more dangerous number nine.
Absolutely. Hell, he got the winner. He showed the world why he should be playing, not Harry Kane. I mean, if you forget the name on the back of the kit, I mean,
I'd start him, honestly.
So what I'd
start.
They would have won every game 2-3-0 with Tony and Phil and all those guys playing. Kane has screwed them up, man, I'm telling you.
And it's funny that we're seeing it, and the manager is not.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe he sees it. Somebody on his staff has to see it. Like, they're telling him, look,
you got
a guy that scores all these goals in England, scores all these goals in Germany, and he's literally a penalty. He's Pinaldo.
Yeah.
It's all he's doing is scoring penalties for England.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get him up there. He still has a cannon for a foot. And he, like you said, I mean, there was no stopping that shot. I mean, he bulleted that thing in. Yeah,
you guess right in the pattern. It's behind you.
It's behind you. But his mind, the way he's playing, is just somewhere else. And Ollie Watkins is going to go forward, man. He's going to go. He's going to streak down the center. He's not going to veer off the path. He's going to stay focused on one singular thing, and that is putting the ball in the back of the net. And you don't have to worry about that. He's not going to drop back and try to be Thiago and pass side to side and all this other crap. He also makes very good runs, intelligent runs, and times them very well. The guy is a star in the making. He won't be playing for his current club for very much longer.
No.
Unless he's just one of those guys, like we say, we love a throwback of like a Marco Reus or someone like Ribery or Robin that stays with their club. Once you get to the bigs, you know, you stay there. Thomas Miller. Who else did we mean? We mentioned somebody else yesterday that was Rooney. Wayne Rooney, right?
Rooney. Yeah, he's
those guys that stayed. I mean, but Watkins right now has got to be a hot commodity. I mean, he's I'd start him. I know Southgate isn't, and we know that. Yeah. We can guarantee you that Harry Kane's going to start.
Absolutely.
So I mean, that's just. But if you look at the let's take a look at their lineup real quick. When we looked at Spain, and that's all well and good, but we have one. You know, Spain is they have. I feel like they have a much more versatile, not a better starting 11, but a more versatile starting 11 because of the instructions they're given and the instructions they carry out.
It's more well-rounded.
Yes. That's what I'm – yes. But against the Netherlands, you look at what England did, right? They come out with their, 3-4-2-1. He comes out with a back three, Nick.
Yeah.
He comes out with a back three. I'm pretty highly. I mean, Kyle Walker got a 3-9. Stones got a 3-7. Pickford 3-8. But then you look at it, Foden and Bellingham probably had. Foden especially probably had one of his better matches.
Yeah, he did. Almost scored a couple goals.
Yes. Saka looked good. Manu looked good. Declan Rice was okay. Trippier, of course,
he was subbed out.
Yeah. He's actually the lowest rated player in midfield.
He
needed
to be subbed out. He was bad.
Subs that came on, Luke Shaw, Konsa, Gallagher, Watkins, Palmer. Now, you and I have talked about this until the cows come home. Why is Cole Palmer not playing more?
Yeah, man. I mean, it's like he's scared to – I swear it's political, man. It's these certain names he can't switch out or he's going to like get punished or something. There has to be some type of reason why he's doing this, because if me and you see it, he has to see it. And someone like Cole Palmer, who took over the Premier League single-handedly, should be playing more. He did see a little bit of time, but the guy should be playing more, man. He should have been playing a whole lot more. And if he would have, England wouldn't have been in those bad situations where they needed those late saving goals to advance. Trippier was bad. They're now saying that Shaw might start. And guess who Shaw will be covering? Yamal, who has been tearing the world up. Luke Shaw will not be able to keep up with him, and it could be very nasty. It could be a repeat of the Vinicius Jr. versus Trent showcase that we saw.
You know exactly where my head was going on that one.
We could see a repeat of that Champions League final where that wing was absolutely cooked by the offensive side of the wing, and it could be bad, man. Luke could be on skates, so we'll see. I think Trippier, I don't know if he got hurt or something was wrong with him, but he had to be taken out, and Shaw got to play the majority of that match. But Yamal will cook Shaw. Shaw's done. I don't know.
He is.
Shaw, how he is considered and still played as much as he is at United is a whole other
conundrum. Well, he plays a lot for the national team, too.
Yeah.
Southgate loves him.
Yeah. That's his boy, so.
I know Mourinho hated him.
Oh, yeah. God, Mourinho hated Shaw.
Yeah. Does
Mourinho, for a reason.
For a reason, right? I mean, am I wrong about that?
Yeah, like, no, I mean, I agree.
Also, I'd like to say, maybe you and I are – well, maybe I'm biased. Maybe you have a different opinion on this. But if you're Koeman, in what world do you not start Frimpong?
Yeah.
Am I wrong about that? No, he didn't even play.
Yeah.
He did not even play against England.
And they took off. There was some bonehead.
De Ligt didn't play. Wijnaldum didn't play. Yeah. Frimpong didn't play. The subs that came on were Bobby, Veerman, Weghorst, and Zirkzee.
Yeah, they were sad.
I just don't agree with some of these things. Man. Yeah, the other one's kind of like, I mean, Koeman's not the strongest manager.
No, Koeman will be fired. He shouldn't be. He'll be fired.
He'll get the sack.
Yes, because it's time to move to another person. Because they, in all actuality, man, this was the Dutch's chance to make a final. And Dutch versus Spain would have been just as good as a match as England versus Spain.
Yeah.
And Netherlands, I think the Netherlands might have had a better shot to beat Spain than England does, because the Netherlands are actually going to make the changes they need as the game progresses, and they're going to go at you. I think England are more so going to be a little bit more reactionary because they know Spain can hit. So, and you got Southgate leading the helm, so anything could fucking happen. But
yes,
yeah, Netherlands need to make a change. You reading those names that didn't even get to touch the pitch,
it's insane.
It's shocking.
Yes.
So, yeah.
So Ian Motson, you know, he's young, but he played in the Champions League final. Gravenberg, Bergwijn, Frimpong, Wijnaldum, De Ligt, none of them see the pitch. Obviously, Daley Blind, I mean, the guy's like, what is he, like 49 now?
Yeah.
But some of these guys, Schouten, Reinders, I mean, okay, Gakpo starting on the wing. I don't have a problem with it. He's been really good for the Netherlands. He's been good for the national team. Xavi Simons has been fantastic. I have no issue with that. Memphis Depay really kind of,
he shit the bed.
Yeah, he really did. Daniel Malen, he was excellent in the match before this, but he was actually the lowest rated attacker.
Yeah, he did bad.
Yeah, he did bad. And then you have Ake, Van Dijk, De Vrij, and Dumfries in the back, which is not a bad back four. No. I'm not going to hate on that, but you sub out Dumfries, I would have put in Frimpong, for instance. And Koeman just didn't get it right.
Yeah, he fumbled
on the starting 11, and he didn't get it right on the subs. Now, do we expect, Nick, for England to go back to start a back three again? Or do we think they're going to go back to a back four? You just mentioned Luke Shaw. Yeah. Is Luke Shaw going to play wing back, or is he going to play fullback?
Yeah.
That's my question to you. If Luke Shaw starts, what role does he play? And you just said something about you don't know what the hell Southgate's going to do. Like, I would never expect him to go to a 3-4-2-1, and he did.
Yeah. Well, what's his name had a yellow card, so he was suspended, his center back pairing that he was using in the first few matches. So that's why he had no choice but to make that switch, and now he's stuck with it even though the guy came back. So I don't know, man. I don't know if he's going to do the three. I think he'll stick with the three, and he'll probably keep Shaw like an idiot and do what he should not do. But who knows, man? I mean, it's a toss-up because you never know with Southgate, man. You really don't. But if Shaw is going to have to cover that wing where Yamal is, one of the fastest, quickest players on the planet is at, who can actually score and assist, it's going to be – it could spell trouble for England.
I think that the back three that they have, the one they used against – Holland is actually not a bad back three. If you're going to play a back three, I would take that. Stones, Walker, Guigui, I think that like is a really good
strong
back three.
Yeah.
The midfield, Trippier, that's a Southgate homer pick right there. He loves that guy.
Yeah,
he loves that guy. I mean,
he lives off a free kick against Croatia or something that he did 6 years ago. It's ridiculous. Like, I can't imagine why he should still be playing. And last match it showed because he was bad. And guess what? Southgate had no choice but to get him the hell off the pitch. Because I think if Trippier would have stayed
33
on,
now, they would have cooked him. For Newcastle. The guy's still in love with him. It's just, you know, it's one of those things that it's just, you can't explain it. It's like I said, Podolski's there for comic relief. Yeah. You know, he's on. But Podolski at least didn't play. Trippier's playing.
He's playing.
So Rice, Maynou, Saka, I like that. Although I would say... if you wanted to, you know, you could do a 4-2-1 in terms of like midfield, wingers, striker. Tell me if I'm lost my mind here, but I would honestly, I would start Cole Palmer on the right. I would start Cole Palmer on the right and have Saka maybe coming off the bench, Foden in front of Palmer. Bellingham to the left of Foden, and I would have Ollie Watkins up front.
No, that's not crazy at all.
But that will never happen.
No, God, no, that'll never happen. Saka will never sit on that bench. He won't do it, even though it could be or should be necessary for them to actually lift that trophy. He just won't do it just because the simple fact of the names and the political side of this stuff. It's their star boy. It's the youngster coming up. They got to play him. He saved them that one game, which made it even more impossible for Southgate to get him off the pitch. Even if he's bad, they got to. It's like they have a set of rules that are on his little clipboard. And number one is don't take Kane off. Number two is don't take Saka off.
Right.
No matter how bad.
Well, the other one is has struck you and I as a little bit of a surprise. Is just the complete ignoring of Anthony Gordon. I mean, just like the guy doesn't even exist.
Yeah, has he even played? I don't think he's played.
I don't think that he has, actually.
I don't think he's touched the pitch, man. Which
it's
is just crazy.
Insane.
Yeah, because he
is it. But I guess it speaks to two things. It speaks to how loaded this England roster
is. True.
That's one thing, right? But on the other side, it also speaks to how much of an idiot this manager is because there's no rotation.
None.
There's no rotation.
None.
It's one thing if you don't rotate and you don't have a bench. I get that. Yeah. Like sometimes like, hey man, the 11 I got is the 11 I got to ride with because the other 12 suck. Yeah. But England's got 23 as I've said, Joe Gomez, England's got 22.
Yeah.
22 players. Sorry, man. I just, even as a Liverpool's diehard, I just don't have any use for Joe Gomez on my national team. I'm sorry. But Watkins getting on great. Tony Gordon's forgotten about. Trent has been given up on. Gallagher, he plays, but Cole Palmer doesn't play enough.
Yeah.
Doesn't play enough. And, you know, Bowen, he's another one. You know, again, you could bring him on for 5 minutes, just get him some experience or something.
Yeah.
You know, there. So I think that we kind of know what to expect from the lineup that Southgate will put out there. The question is the formation. I don't know that we know exactly what formation that he's going to use, unless you think that he'll go back to a 3-4-2-1 because it worked. Even though it took 90 minutes to fully work, it did work against Netherlands. Well, they won in regulation. Then you have to go to a penalty shootout. You know, that's a big deal for England that they don't have to go to extra time or some crap like that, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, do you think so? Is he basically going to copy and paste this game plan?
I mean, I think he'll just do the same thing he did last match, to be honest. I really do. I mean, I wouldn't drop a penny on guessing what Southgate does, but we'll probably see the same thing that he did last match, man. I really believe so. And we'll probably see it literally move for move, script action for script action. We'll see a little, if it's 0-0 or 1-1 or something, we'll see subs in the 75th and it'll be Ollie Watkins and Tony, or it'll be Gallagher or Palmer for Shaw or somebody. And then that we'll see the same thing. It'll be the same thing again and again.
We should also mention back on July 6th, the last Saturday, he put out the exact same lineup against Switzerland.
Yeah.
And it was a 3-4-2-1
soccer goal for them to get it. And then they won in penalties because of Kanji.
And Bolo scores in the 75th and Saka scores. It's like, if you don't score, England won't score. But if you score, England's going to score. Yeah. It's like they're not waking up.
Yeah, until you score.
Until you score. And then they won't beat you in regulation. No. They'll beat you in penalties, which they did. They destroyed Switzerland on penalties. But
I don't think it'll work against Spain.
No, I don't think so either. Yeah. I don't think so either, man. And that's got to be the worry, right? Yeah. Is that okay? You've gone to a 3-4-2 now for two games in a row. Yes, you have won basically as close to the death as you can get in both of those. But at some point, like you said, the magical moments run out, right? And it's when you really play a team that is a juggernaut that's when it runs out, right? When you need it the most, when you absolutely need it the most, that's when you get cooked, right?
Yeah, they won't come through, and then you're wondering what's going on, and it's a simple answer to a simple question, is you were counting on individual moments, not team play. And when that happens, you can only blame yourself, man.
Now, so the funny thing is, against the one where they – I mean, we talk – the one where they run to the death, man, you and I, you know, like when something is gone, when it's over, it's quickly forgotten, right? Slovakia had them beat.
Yes.
In the round of 16.
Yeah.
Slovakia had them beat. You and I were already at the eulogy.
Yeah, we were laughing.
You're like, pretty man, your pick is out in the Sweet 16. Yeah. I mean, done. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, look, I picked them. I said they were going to win the Euro, and they floundered. They floundered their way to a group title, 5 points. 2 draws and a win, and they have completely shit the bed in the round of 16. And Jude Bellingham magic, 90th plus 5, Nick. We talked about it last week on the program. Just reiterating, that was a 4-2-3-1. That was a 4-2-3-1. The difference is he moved Trippier back into – or excuse me. Well, the next two matches he moved him into midfield. Yeah. This, he was in the back line. Yeah. And by the way, Trippier had one of the lowest ratings on the pitch that day. The front four were Foden, Bellingham, Saka, and Kane. And I don't mind that, but it just didn't work.
Yeah.
And then your midfield, your two guys, your holding number sixes were Rice and Mane. Yeah. And I don't, so essentially all the same names, Nick, in the 3-4-2-1, the exact same names, but just in a different formation.
Spots. Yeah. Yeah.
So he hasn't rotated at all.
No, he's just
moving people around. I think that's a mistake.
Yeah, big time. I mean, you know exactly who's going to get the blame if England lose. It's going to be Southgate. It doesn't matter what happens on the pitch because they're going to say, well,
but Southgate will blame something else.
So. Yeah, of course he will. Yeah. They'll say Southgate had him in the wrong place, or he shouldn't have been played there, or he should have been subbed off. It won't be like anything else. It'll all be Southgate.
Yeah.
And if they win, they'll probably give it to the players. So. Yeah.
Well, it has come time to make our final predictions, Nick. This is how the European Championship will end. Go to you first, sir. How do you see this playing out?
Spain, man. I don't see England beating Spain. Picking the score line.
Yes.
I don't know. We'll say 2-1 because England will get a penalty and they'll get a goal.
Yeah, somehow they'll get
a goal. They'll get some kind of goal, either be a penalty or maybe probably something magical from Saka or Jude, and Spain will win 2-1. I'll take Spain.
Jude and Saka are the two players that have the individual talent to equalize and get you, and because they are phenomenal players. Yeah. I mean, you don't win La Liga Player of the Season and you're a piece of crap.
Nope.
So Jude Bellingham can play football. Yes. So we know that. But I'm gonna go. I got to pick England. Yeah. I can't look. I did before. I'm gonna do it again. I'm gonna go one more round with these guys and. So here's how I'm going to do this. It's going to be 1-1 in regulation. Both teams score. Spain scores first. England, typical wake-up call, equalizes. They hold out. Neither team really wants to risk it. We're in a final. Don't do too much. If you can go forward and you have a breakaway, do it. But if you don't have a clear shot, don't risk making the mistake. Just hold out for 15 and another 15 and get to penalties. And I think that England this time wins in penalties. I think they win 5-3 over Spain. Pickford gets one save. That's going to be enough. And England wins in the worst possible way. But they don't care. A win's a win. They're European champions. First time ever. First big title since 1966. And Southgate, one of the most unimpressive managers, goes out, though, with a record that is very enviable for the English national team. The way he did it is butt ugly.
Yeah,
I mean, he took the ugliest girl to the dance, and somehow she won prom queen.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you can do it, that'll be exactly how it ends.
And he goes out, and he comes to America and manages.
Please. They better know.
The thing is that Nick's going to hate the U.S. men's national team if Southgate comes on, and I'm like, I don't want to hate him, but man, I don't want to see. I just really hope that doesn't happen.
Yes.
I'd be all for David Wagner coming over, though. Like, let's
go. Yeah, I mean, reading that gave me some hope, man. Hopefully you can get someone like that with the pedigree that Klopp has given him, man. That would be absolutely beautiful. So now I'm really hoping to see that guy. That's who I want to see.
Well, next week we'll analyze these two matches. We're going to talk about who won the Copa America, who won the European Championship, why they did it, and where we go from here. We'll also talk about some transfers. The market will really start to heat up after this Sunday. You're going to have players now that will get their extended summer vacations, but they'll also be able to negotiate with managers, meet with clubs. So the transfer market, which is typically on hold during a major tournament, it's open, but it's like, you know, you're getting players like Guirassy that aren't playing. He's going to go to Dortmund now from Stuttgart. Yeah, he's not playing in any kind of competition. So those are the moves that are being made right now. But the whole market, most everybody that's anybody is playing in these two competitions. So we're going to see, I think we're going to start to see some rumors cooked up, some actual moves made, some contracts signed, put ink to paper, and we're going to talk about that. But other than that, man, we've covered it all. I know you and I are looking forward to a massive day on Sunday of football. This is it. This is what it's all come down to. Two massive tournaments in the final on the same day. Bastille Day in France. Happy Revolution Day in France. Happy to all of you guys. They opened the jail up. I think there were 6 prisoners inside at the time. Kind of a French way of doing things, like blow it up, but it really isn't that impressive.
No. big deal, but not very big.
Big deal, but not really big deal. But, you know, Louis the 16th did face the guillotine.
Yeah.
Got his head chopped off, man.
Sure,
nice clean cut. You know, it's like they're cutting your ham at the deli. So what setting do you want it on?
Yeah.
How thick do you want it? Sandwich thin sliced? But anyway, and Nick, you got anything else, man?
That's it, man. Yeah, we're going into this Sunday ready for some excitement. And really after this, man, we got a month and then the leagues kick off.
Yes. So
we'll be looking forward to that.
Yes. All right. Well, everybody have a great weekend of football. Thank you again for the support. Please give us 5-star review if you can. And thank you for following on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And of course, listening to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And for Nick and Critty, this is The Basement, turning out the lights. See you next week.